content of this program is intended for people who are blind or print impaired. Hello, this is Hugh Bennett from North Carolina Reading Service. For the next hour, I'll be reading to you from Triangle Business Journal. Today's program is underwritten by Highwoods Properties. With its headquarters in Raleigh, North Carolina, Highwoods, a real estate investment trust, is committed to making our communities better places to live and work. Highwoods can be reached at 866-449-6637. Our cover story this week, what's next? After a year of dramatic storylines in the Triangle, we look at what's coming in 2026. Before the cover story, we'll go to the biz section. Biz, as always, is written by managing editor Dane Huffman. Tragic scene in Beaufort. The Carteret County town of Beaufort is one of North Carolina's most picturesque spots, so December 15th was a tough day for that coastal community. The Duncan House, which dates to 1790, was destroyed by an early morning fire that had firefighters from across the region scrambling to help. The house is located on Front Street, the key street that runs along the waterfront and gives the town so much character. Ohio developer wants more Clayton land. Land in Clayton is in demand, and the Ohio developer behind a massive project coming to Johnston County is looking to add more as it pursues national retailers such as Target. Casto is seeking to add 13 acres off Clayton Boulevard to a recently approved mixed-use project. The Clayton Town Council voted in August to rezone 74 acres across two adjacent parcels. The 13-acre parcel has a different owner and is zoned for residential large lot, that's RLL, and Casto is seeking a rezoning to add the parcel to a unified conditional commercial CZC zoning district. RDU ramps up craft beer and food options. The Raleigh Beer Garden is now open in Terminal 1, and more craft brew locations are on the way as the options for food, beverage, and retail at Raleigh-Durham International Airport continue to evolve. The expansion of the popular venue in Glenwood South features more than 30 taps in addition to pub food. That RDU offering is well below the more than 380 beers available at the home location, but 30 taps is still a hefty offering. RDU is offering more new restaurants and bars in 2026. Coming next year are Bond Brothers Kitchen and Bar of Carrie and Adios by Durham chef Oscar Diaz. Lone Rider Brewery of Raleigh is expected to reopen in 2026. That follows the opening of three options in August, Buongiorno & Son, Duncan, and Guy's Pizza Joint. In many ways, it's an extension of a push for more options and more local fare that dates back a couple of decades, what RDU refers to as an elevated experience. It wasn't so long ago that bland, overpriced food was just part of an airport experience, but back in 2002, RDU dramatically expanded its concessions program with 35 new restaurants and retail outlets. At the time, that included the first Golden Corral Airport Express and a shop that focused on Atlantic Coast Conference apparel. The offerings even included a cyber cafe where, whoa, travelers could connect to the internet while dining. At the time, airport officials said customers were seeking more variety. And while much has changed since 2002, back when the ACC had only 9 teams, the demand for variety has only increased. Tammy Hall Roberts, board chair of the Raleigh-Durham Airport Authority, has called in an ongoing effort to reimagine airport dining. RDU now has 24 restaurants and 18 retail stores. In South Raleigh, there's a new concept for motorcycle dealership. Venture capitalist Ross O'Brien has turned his passion for motorcycles into festivals attracting thousands of Raleighites through music, art, and motorcycles. Now he's revving up a brick-and-mortar location. O'Brien has invested about $3.5 million to purchase Barnett's Suzuki Ducati at 1509 Lake Wheeler Road and has rebranded it as Art Moto Garage. He plans to add a cafe and art components to the property. Our dream is to have a destination here that is so cool that even people who don't ride just want to come here because it's got such a unique and special feel to it, O'Brien said. Mike Barnett operated the shop for 55 years. The motorcycle shop remains open, with 300 people attending recently for the first open house. And in Midtown, Capulet or Capulet, I'm not sure, Cocktail Club opens in Exchange Raleigh. A new cocktail venue in Midtown Raleigh has grown on one of William Shakespeare's most famous plays for inspiration. a Capulet cocktail club named for Juliet Capulet from Romeo and Juliet, opened in December 16th at 1000 Social Street in DeWitt Carolina's Exchange Raleigh development. Filmmaker and hospitality entrepreneur Patrick Shanahan, along with Robbie Opperman and Zach Thomas, look to transport guests to the Verona of the Italian Renaissance with the modern flair. The 2,700 square foot space features a 30-foot dome ceiling, stained glass, and a waterfall backdrop behind the bar. Capulet is located next to Shanahan's restaurant Peregrine, which he opened with Chef Saif Rahman in April. It joins a number of other retailers open or coming soon at the Exchange, including Toastique and Mezcalito. Sounds more lively than, say, a Hamlet-themed cocktail spot. We'll turn now to the cover story. This week's cover story is a special report about what's next coming in 2026 and beyond. Data centers bring both promise and concerns. With the explosion of artificial intelligence, data center demand isn't going to slow down anytime soon in North Carolina, and one county over an hour east of Raleigh may have a particularly interesting 2026. Dan Schaefer, the president of Energy Storage Solutions, LLC, has been clear he plans on bringing tens of billions of dollars worth of data center investments to Edgecombe County. Next year could paint a more clear picture of what these investments look like. Energy Storage Solutions, a Robertsonville LLC, burst onto the scene in August when it announced a $6.4 billion data center and energy storage investment in the town of Tarboro that Schaefer has said will create 500 jobs. But following intense public scrutiny, the company failed to secure a special use permit necessary to build its project, as a majority of the Tarboro Town Council voted to reject the permit in September. In many ways, it's a microcosm of a rising national issue as AI takes root in American life. Major companies are looking for places to put data centers, and often that means the rural communities that have land and often need jobs. But some towns, such as Tarboro, aren't convinced they want the projects in their backyards. In November, Energy Storage Solutions sued the town to overturn the decision, saying the town council disregarded competent material and substantial evidence that showed the company's proposal satisfied the permitting standards laid out in the town's Unified Development Ordinance for issuing special use permits. That case, which is currently in the Edgecombe County Superior Court, could have major ramifications for how local government bodies approach data center proposals. And outside of that litigation, at the Kingsborough Megasite in Edgecombe County, Schaefer said he is planning a $19.2 billion data center project. The Edgecombe County Board of Commissioners voted in November to change its UDO that would allow data centers to go into general industrial zoning districts, of which the megasite is one. "We're going to be submitting for a building permit," Schaefer said. "In the first quarter, we hope to be breaking ground there." Repeatedly in the last months of 2025, Schaefer declined to share who the investors are in Energy Storage Solutions and who the end users would be of these projects. In 2026, as these plans potentially move forward and as Energy Storage Solutions pitches more projects around North Carolina, Schaefer said, "We intend on being the biggest data operation in North Carolina. Edgecombe County will be one to watch as a potential harbinger for the rest of the state when it comes to working through explosive data center demand." Turning now to the world of breweries, craft brewers scramble as costs rise and tastes change. Purveyors of craft beer in the Triangle could be in for a rocky 2026 if challenging trends continue. In 2024, the NC Craft Brewers Guild tracked more brewery closures, 25, than openings, 24, in the state, echoing what's happening with breweries across the country. In 2025, local brewery owners expressed concerns over increased competition, rent increases, tariffs, and changing drinking habits, among other hurdles. Four breweries in and around the Triangle filed for bankruptcy during the spring of 2025, and now three of those four breweries are closed. Cotton House Craft Brewers filed for Chapter 11 bankruptcy in April and closed in November. Vicious Fish's Brewery abruptly closed two of its locations, one in Fuquay Varina and one in Apex, within weeks of each other in November and early December. And in November, Fainting Goat Brewing Company announced the closures of its two tap rooms in Fuquay Varina and Benson. Many breweries have turned to THC and non-alcoholic beverages to stay in line with customers' changing preferences. However, the federal government's budget bill included a provision to limit THC levels in beverages to 0.4 milligrams per container, which will take effect in November. For Trophy Brewing, THC beverages make up between 10 to 15% of its overall production, according to co-owner Chris Powers. At 10 milligrams of THC per container, that production will soon be illegal. It's scary because it has become a solid part of our business, but we hope that some things can change between now and when that goes into effect, Powers said this year. We're continuing to monitor it, work with people wherever we can, and lend our voice and let them know how that affects us as an employer in the area and how it affects North Carolina hemp as an industry. Bright spots remain for the beer industry in the Triangle, including Trophy Brewing's new tap room, restaurant, and entertainment venue in Five Points. Crooked Hammock Brewery, based in Delaware, celebrated its groundbreaking near the Crabtree Valley Mall, with plans to open during the spring of 2026. Brewery Bavana in downtown Raleigh landed on the Michelin Guide American South as a recommended restaurant and has since benefited from increased sales and reservations. Bond Brothers is making progress on opening its location at the Salvage Yard next to Raleigh Ironworks. Breweries are smart and innovative and scrappy, and we're going to see them repositioning themselves moving forward with all sorts of different business models. Lisa Parker, executive director of the North Carolina Craft Brewers Guild, previously said. What's next in health insurance? Get ready for spikes in health insurance costs. People throughout North Carolina are likely to see health care costs increase in 2026 as contract disputes between providers and insurers drag on and as support for some federal and state programs lapses. Rates for individual and small group marketplaces offered under the Affordable Care Act are increasing next year. The average rate increase for people in North Carolina with individual ACA coverage is about 28.6%. with rate increases ranging from about 16.9% to 36.4%, depending on the insurer. Blue Cross and Blue Shield of North Carolina, for example, is increasing its average rate by about 29.4%. This is a substantial increase from 2025, when its average rate increased 3%. Insurance Commissioner Mike Causey, whose office approved the 2026 rates in October, attributed the changes to increasing costs in health care and the expiration of federal ACA subsidies. Nearly 1 million people in North Carolina have individual ACA health plans. In addition, North Carolina is navigating uncertainty in Medicaid. Facing a substantial funding gap, the NC Department of Health and Human Services in October decreased the reimbursement rate for the state's Medicaid program by varying amounts for different types of providers. For example, DHHS implemented a 10% reduction for hospitals and ambulatory surgery centers and a 3% reduction for imaging service providers and home health services. The department said the decreases were necessary to keep the state's Medicaid program within its allotted funding, as lawmakers have not yet passed a new long-term budget. But state officials in December reversed course and restored reimbursement rates amid legal challenges to some of the cuts. The reversal, however, doesn't address the program's $319 million funding gap. Underfunding a program this critical and putting it at risk is not something we can take lightly, said Dr. Devdutta Sangvi, the DHHS secretary. Medicaid is a lifeline for 3 million North Carolinians, and ongoing uncertainty threatens the health of our entire state. The insurance disruptions extend beyond federal and state programs. Healthcare providers in the Triangle are navigating contract disputes with insurers over reimbursement rates. Wake Med is navigating a dispute with United Healthcare. They failed to agree to a new deal in November, leading Wake Med hospitals, outpatient facilities, and physician specialists to be considered out of the insurer's network. The dispute, which includes commercial and Medicare Advantage plans, has not affected primary care physicians. Wake Med said it has been working in good faith with United Healthcare to come to an agreement. Meanwhile, United Healthcare said it has tried to reach an agreement that is affordable for consumers and employers, and said Wake Med has maintained its demands for unsustainable rate increases. After initially failing to reach a new deal by November 30th, UNC Health and Cigna agreed to a long-term contract on December 12th. The dispute over reimbursement rates temporarily made the health system's hospitals, clinics, and providers out of network for more than 60,000 Cigna members. Duke Health and Aetna also had a public contract dispute that was resolved in October before their previous contract was set to expire. What's next in real estate? Changes are coming at several longtime Triangle malls. Next year, we'll see big changes for some of the Triangle's enclosed malls as new property owners seek redevelopment and new national, regional, and local tenants. Crabtree Valley Mall sold for $290 million in June to Macerich, a California real estate firm attracted to its location and reputation as a popular regional destination. At the time of its purchase, Crabtree's occupancy was 94%, with more than 200 tenants. The mall does $429 million in annual sales and sees 8.7 million visitors. The new owners have expressed plans to bring exciting retailers to the mall's restaurant and retail spaces in the imminent future. So far, Crabtree has landed a Toys R Us pop-up, Splash and holiday-centric shops, Dick's House of Sport is still under construction, Brio Italian Grill abruptly closed in August, adding another restaurant space to fill, along with the former Uncle Julio's space. Macerich Executive Vice President Corey Scott has not ruled out mixed-use development at the property in the future, something that previous developers were eyeing as well. We bought this for initially the productive retail shopping center that it is, and we're going to focus our energies on that out the gate. And those other pieces would be something we'll spend time on in the future at some point, Scott said. Macerich has pledged $60 million to renovate the mall, so guests will start noticing more of these improvements in 2026, including a fresh paint, upgraded lighting, and a revitalized food court. In Durham, Florida developer Regency Centers submitted plans for a reimagined retail at Northgate Mall after years of effort to revitalize the site. Regency Centers plans to demolish most of the mall and build 140,245-square-foot anchor tenant space. In addition to five other retail buildings ranging in size from 3,310 square feet to 20,724 square feet. Dubbed Ellerby Square, Regency Centers plans to close on the property in late 2026. The Triangle Town Center is also under fairly new ownership of New York City's Summit Properties USA as the mall attempts to make a comeback. The mall landed 1865 Steak, Seafood, and Cigars, but evicted it for $210,000 in unpaid rent in September. 1865 was part of revitalization efforts for the mall's outdoor retail shops, which remain mostly unoccupied. One bright spot is the new Farmer's Indian restaurant. The mall has landed several new tenants indoors, driven in large part by the residential and hotel growth surrounding the mall. What's next at the coast? More leaps forward coming for Brunswick County, a coastal boom. Brunswick County, North Carolina's fastest-growing county for years, is set for some big redevelopments in 2026. Epsilon Advanced Materials, a manufacturer of battery materials, is planning to begin operations at its $650 million factory in the county next year. The Indian company first made waves in October 2023 when it announced its first North American factory would be in Brunswick County and that it would create 500 jobs for the area in the process. The 1.5 million square foot facility will be located in Mid-Atlantic Industrial Rail Park. The facility is expected to reach full capacity by 2031, and the company announced earlier this year it secured $115 million in federal tax credits to support development costs. Epsilon Advanced Materials CEO Sunit Kumar said the selection process for the first North American facility was cumbersome, with almost 100 sites in contention. One of the major points was that our production process is quite energy intensive, he said earlier this year, so our requirements were clearly that we need power availability, and Duke Energy was gracious enough in our discussion to provide this power at the time we need it, which we wanted. More major manufacturing projects could soon be announced for the coastal county of Brunswick, which has more than 167,000 residents. In August, real estate firm Avison Young listed for sale 624 acres along the Cape Fear River in Brunswick at 3500 Daniels Road Northeast. The land is owned by Alpec Polyester, a division of chemical manufacturing company Alpec, which is based in Mexico. DAC, that's D-A-K, Americas, the U.S.-based subsidiary of Alpek, formerly operated a plant at the site that closed in 2013. Bill Early, executive director of the Public-Private Economic Partnership, Brunswick Business and Industry Development, said he has had his eyes on this site for quite some time for potential economic development projects. He hopes the site will be developed into an industrial or manufacturing operation. Beyond manufacturing hopes, Brunswick County is set to receive major upgrades in the healthcare industry next year. In April, Novant Health of Winston-Salem began construction on a 16,000-square-foot outpatient surgery center in Leland. That facility is set to open in 2026. The group also recently filed an application for 11,165-square-foot freestanding emergency department in Carolina Shores, as well as a separate application to build a 251,142,260-square-foot hospital on a 40-acre site in Leland. Another real estate what's next, Kane Realty looks to raise the North Hills skyline. After refiling a zoning request for more height in North Hills, Kane Realty Corp. is getting ready to go before Raleigh City Council. In September, Kane Realty refiled its rezoning request for four different parcel collections on Six Forks and Lassiter Mills Roads. The developer is asking for 12, 20, and 40 stories, the same height it was seeking back in 2023 before it pulled its rezoning request. Despite asking for more height, the developer has added a condition that it will not build more square footage of space than the current zoning allows. The current zoning is 5 and 12 stories, so density would remain at those levels. In addition, the tallest buildings would be 37 stories, not the requested 40, and would be along Six Forks Road toward the center of North Hills Main District. Callie Walker, director of development for Kane Realty, previously told TBJ, "It's important to understand that we are not asking for more density. Rather, we are asking for taller, thinner buildings with the same density limits we are currently zoned to build within, a rare approach." Walker said the developer wants to be able to have taller buildings so that it can build more active and engaging gathering spaces. Previously, concerns over the increased density leading to traffic congestion and high cost of living are what prompted Kane Realty to withdraw its application. The City Council met several times in 2022, weighing whether to approve or reject the rezoning, repeatedly pushing off the vote. Now a new Raleigh City Council will hear the recently refiled rezoning for the first time on January 6, 2026. The Planning Commission has already met on the case and recommends approval 7-1. The dissenting vote was because of lack of affordable housing offered, lack of density and height transitions, and uncertainty over what would be built, according to city documents. Overall, the Planning Commission is recommending that the City Council see if Kane Realty is willing to add more frontage standards and height transitions. Given the parcel's rezoning history and the controversy surrounding it, the City Council will likely take at least two meetings to hear public comment from the applicant and discuss the case. But because the first hearing is happening so early in 2026, it's likely a decision will be made by mid-2026. If it's approved, Kane Realty would move into the design and planning stage. Walker said the developer remains open to conversations with neighbors to continue addressing their concerns. What's next for downtown? Gateway site faces opposition in Raleigh. After getting the green light for 30 stories, a Raleigh developer is preparing for next steps on a downtown Raleigh property. Raleigh Development Company will be able to develop, quote, a northern gateway, unquote, into downtown Raleigh after receiving approval in October from the Raleigh City Council to rezone the site to downtown mixed use up to 30 stories. That approval came with opposition, both from City Council members and residents, particularly from the nearby Glenwood Brooklyn neighborhood, over concerns that the height was too tall and would negatively impact the surrounding homes. The site is along the future Smoky Hollow Park and at the corner of Peace and West Streets. In fact, that opposition had been so strong that the City Council rejected the 30-story request the first time around in May 2023. Residents and council members who supported the height and project did so because of the density and enhancement it would bring to the area. Now the developer is looking to the future with the development and how it can best create a lasting asset for Raleigh, one that adds value to the community and reflects the character of the area. Vice President Chris Carter told TBJ when it refiled the rezoning application. That includes bringing on a development partner, as the firm isn't equipped to handle a development this large on its own, one that's been estimated to cost $300 million. In 2022, Carter shared with TBJ that it had tapped JLL to help them find a partner. In addition to finding a partner, the developer will likely begin the initial process of planning and design for the project, potentially filing a site plan by the end of 2026. At the time of approval, the developer shared early concept plans that would include a 24-story building on the northern portion of the site and a 27-story building on the southern portion. The two buildings would be separated by a grand stair that would also join West Street to the future Smoky Hollow Park. There would also be a pedestrian promenade along the ground floor retail spaces. However, there could be a snag to the whole process, as the Glenwood Brooklyn Neighborhood Group has hired an attorney and sued the City of Raleigh and Wake County Superior Court to have the approved rezoning overturned. That neighborhood group's complaint is that the City Council should not have waived the two-year waiting period for filing rezoning, as the application did not change substantially, that the decision to rezone was arbitrary and illegal spot zoning. Carter said he won't be sharing further information at this time. What's next in technology? AI set to dominate Triangle businesses in 2026. Artificial intelligence is likely to dominate businesses in the Triangle in 2026 as the emerging technology continues to transform multiple sectors. Robbie Allen, founder of AI-focused Automated Consulting Group, acknowledges some overhype, particularly when it comes to startups adding AI simply to create buzz. He's spoken to entrepreneurs who added AI into all of their materials because their competition is doing it. Still, he believes the reality of AI is transformative, despite comparisons to the dot-com downfall. Allen said talk of an AI bubble is premature and largely media-driven. We're entering the trough of disillusionment before most companies have even deployed the technology, he said. AI is certainly going to be transformational. It's just going to take a lot longer than what people talk about today. The transformation could come with disruption for which the state needs to prepare. Already layoffs have been attributed to AI. Arvind Krishna, CEO of IBM, recently predicted that AI could displace up to 10% of U.S. jobs in the coming years, and a recent MIT study found AI can already replace 11.7% of the U.S. workforce. Senator DeAndrea Salvador, a North Carolina lawmaker who worked with researchers on the project, said she couldn't speak to how her home state might use the data, but it's my hope that this or something similar can provide additional consideration as conversations pertaining to AI continue. AI could also create opportunities. Krishna recently told The Verge that companies will keep hiring just in different areas and said AI will boost productivity. Wouldn't you rather have an entry-level person and AI make them more like a 10-year expert, he's quoted as saying. Outside of what AI can do, big bets are being made on the infrastructure to support it in the state. That includes a planned $10 billion data center investment by Amazon in Richmond County. Other projects, including planned data centers in Holly Springs and Tarboro, have created controversy, even without a firm tenant in place. More data center projects are likely to be introduced in North Carolina in 2026 as officials decide how to meet the AI need that's coming, and that's in and of itself creates new opportunities. Troubled semiconductor manufacturer Wolfspeed, for example, is hoping to expand into the AI data center vertical and take advantage of the demand that just keeps coming, or just seems to keep coming. What's next in aviation? How RDU's $2.5 billion plans will impact travelers. At Raleigh-Durham International Airport, 2026 will be a year of growth, albeit with a few headaches for travelers. That's because flyers enjoying expanded network options, including the nonstop flight to Dublin, set to debut in April, will run into heavy construction as the airport works to support the traffic that's coming. As of the start of December, 7 new flights were set to debut at RDU in 2026. 6 of them are via low-cost carrier Breeze Airways, which launches its first international flights out of RDU in June to Jamaica and the Dominican Republic. But it's Aer Lingus's bet on RDU's first nonstop flight to Dublin that is likely to get the most headlines. The flight, lured in part by a $300,000 commitment from local businesses, gives RDU Flyers connections to more than 20 European cities. It adds to the airport's stable of transatlantic flights that already include Frankfurt, Paris, London, and Reykjavik. But Flyers may feel some pain getting there as construction on four major projects ramps up to the tune of $2.5 billion. At the start of the year, the Park RDU Economy 4 lot near I-540 and US-70 permanently closed to travelers, becoming an employee-only lot. Instead, Flyers will have to head to the new Park Economy 3 lot, which is scheduled for full completion in the second half of 2026. There are some advantages with the new lot, including an under-construction amenities building and 100 EV charging stations. Travelers also may run into extra road congestion as work ramps up on John Brantley Boulevard, the horseshoe-like main street of the airport that shuttles traffic around the terminals. The bridge at the upper level of Terminal 2 is being redone, a two-year project that will cause some traffic shifts. Other visible projects will include the Terminal 2 landside expansion effort, which involves a temporary wall that will eventually give way to a bigger building. The move will also allow for an entirely new checkpoint, but it's a lengthy two-year process. Flyers will also see construction ramping up on the new international runway, which will soon require the relocation of Lumley Road, a two-year $90 million effort expected to start next summer. With passenger traffic expected to double to 30 million by 2050, not investing in upgrades just isn't an option, RDU officials have said, and the airport can't stop at the $2.5 billion. Gate expansions, for example, are not included in the $2.5 billion capital budget, impossible right now because of the locations of the current runway. A larger expansion to allow for more gates could start as early as 2029, provided the runway goes as scheduled and the RDU Airport Authority approves it, but it would require more funding. In another technology what's next, Wolfspeed to pivot strategy after bankruptcy. On a recent weekday, Wolfspeed's $5 billion factory in the Chatham County town of Siler City had a virtually empty parking lot. And in an interview, Rob Furl, the Durham company's new CEO, said it may stay that way for a while as Wolfspeed works to find its post-bankruptcy footing. "We're very disciplined when it comes to capital spending," he said in November. "What doesn't make any sense is to go ahead and spend way too much money if the demand isn't there. It's really important that we're not getting ahead of ourselves again." With or without its new factory, 2026 promises to be a pivotal year for the company, which just this year went through a Chapter 11 bankruptcy reorganization, an executive shakeup, and additional layoff rounds. Furl's predecessor, Greg Lowe, bet big on electric vehicles as driving demand for the next generation semiconductor materials Wolfspeed is developing. Furl, however, is hedging his bets. He's working to land contracts in new verticals, such as data centers. Expanding the company's business lines to new sectors will be a key push for the company in 2026. "If you're a one-trick pony like in the past, that's just very, very dangerous," he told TBJ. Wolfspeed could also see support from the federal government in 2026, though it's not something the company is banking on, Furl said. Wolfspeed's previous CHIPS deal was vacated through its bankruptcy, but CHIPS deals are starting to ramp up again. A few miles away from Wolfspeed's headquarters, for example, is a pilot facility for rare earth magnets. The company behind it, Vulcan Elements, is planning a commercial-scale facility in Johnston County with the $50 million CHIPS incentive. The federal government has been taking equity stakes in companies in critical industries, a trend that could continue. Furl said he's had talks with the White House and other policymakers about opportunities for partnership. He sees the silicon carbide materials Wolfspeed is developing for defense applications, electric vehicles, and power grids as having critical national security implications that warrant federal interest. "Do you really want to be dependent on some other country manufacturing critical infrastructure components?" he said. The Wolfspeed story is one the Triangle is invested in, as it began in a laboratory at NC State University in the 80s, and 2026 could start its comeback or continue the slide. Furl is bullish on the future, saying his plan is to get back to its innovative spirit. "This is the core of Wolfspeed," he said. What's next in sports business? Rejuvenated Wilson welcomes baseball team in 2026. With the help of America's Pastime, Wilson might experience somewhat of a rebirth in 2026. The Wilson Warbirds minor league baseball team is set to make their debut in Wilson in April in a new stadium downtown. This has been a move years in the making. The city of Wilson first announced in late 2023 it would be building a new $64 million stadium through a public-private partnership with NSV Development, where the former Carolina Mudcats, who had played in Zebulon for 35 seasons, would relocate. The Wilson Warbirds will be the single A affiliate for the Milwaukee Brewers baseball organization, and the baseball stadium is the centerpiece in a plethora of investments in downtown Wilson, once a former tobacco hub that has faced population decline over the past decades. For example, Wilson County had 81,234 people in 2010, according to the U.S. Census Bureau, but that number dropped to 78,784 in 2020. NSV Development is led by Michael Lemansky, one of the main forces behind the revitalization of downtown Durham. The firm is pledging $200 million to $400 million in public-private investments to build a hotel, restaurants, retail, and housing in addition to the baseball stadium. Lemansky recently said these investments could help reverse Wilson's population trends and once again make it a thriving area. Once you give people a diversity of housing options and you start to have a thriving, vibrant downtown, it changes people's perspectives, he said. You're not just improving the quality of life, but you're making it much more of an exciting place to be. For Joe Ricklutti, the president of the Warbirds and a veteran of minor league baseball, the new baseball stadium could be much more than just an economic engine for the eastern North Carolina city. There's a wonderful opportunity to provide a forum for a community, for people to get together and experience something live, Ricklutti said recently. It's a place where neighbors and colleagues and friends and family can all get together for squeaky clean family entertainment, and there's something nice about that. The Warbirds are set to kick off their inaugural season on April 3rd at another North Carolina team, the Fayetteville Woodpeckers. The home opener will debut in the new stadium will be on April 14th when the Warbirds take on the Lynchburg Hillcats. What's next in retail? Pay-to-play is an emerging concept in retail spaces. From indoor golf to pickleball to ping pong, business owners are betting that their customers will pay to play. The Triangle has gradually added more entertainment venues in recent years, with the debut of Jaguar Bolera last year at Raleigh Ironworks, complete with duck pin bowling, karaoke, darts, and extensive food and drink options. Now a number of others are coming onto the scene. With the national closures of big box retailers such as Joann, Inc., Party City, Big Lots, and more this year, retail landlords are looking to entertainment businesses to help boost foot traffic at their shopping centers. An experience is a very different traffic driver for most retail locations, so there's a big influx of those types of players. Catlin Gillens, a UNC Chapel Hill professor whose recent research focuses on retail, said, indoor golf owners are taking big swings with opening new outposts here as the country club fees have significantly increased across the triangle. Mythic Golf plans to open at City Platt's revamped Kmart property on Western Boulevard. A physical therapist is opening Back Nine Golf at Falls River Town Center in North Raleigh, while the Swing Bays is coming to Wake Forest in May, and Golf House is opening in Holly Springs' Oakview Commons. In Town Golf Club, based in Atlanta, plans to open in the North Hills Innovation District, bringing its signature pit private golf and social club to Raleigh for the first time. The 13,000-square-foot venue will cost $7 million to $10 million to build out, and will boast a food and beverage program led by culinary director Zeb Stevenson. Meanwhile, mini golf is having a moment as well, with the addition of Partee Shack and its sister business Battle and Birdie. Meanwhile, fast-growing restaurant group LM Restaurants decided to close Carolina Ale House on Glenwood South and open a playful venue with ping pong, shuffleboard tables, and electric dart boards. The Pivot to Smash Social Club is intended to provide guests with another way to socialize through play. Even traditional retailers are cashing in on the trend. Durham's Dick's House of Sport has opened, while Raleigh remains under construction. The stores often come with a climbing wall, batting cage, and other ways for customers to be active. Pickleball continues to gain steam in the Triangle. Christopher Mitzerlich is in the process of bringing a three-story, 160,000-square-foot building with pickleball, sand volleyball, and badminton courts. The venue's budget is $15 million, and Mitrolik is targeting a late 2026 opening. Likewise, Rob Autry is still making progress on the massive swing racket and paddle development in Briar Creek, aiming now to open in 2027 due to delays. What's next in development? Dick's Park transformation to continue in 2026. The development momentum in and around Dorothea Dix Park isn't ending with 2025, as big things are planned for the year ahead. The City of Raleigh will kick off 2026 with the abatement and demolition of all of the brick buildings on the western part of the park, except for Flowers Cottage. Kate Pierce, Executive Director of Dix Park, said, once demolition is complete on the four buildings, the spots where the building stood will be transitioned into park space. The abatement and demolition is expected to take about 9 months. The city will tear up some of the building's parking lots while keeping others, such as the lot at the Williams Building next to the dog park and the parking lots around the Adams Building. The city will also wrap up the design of the restoration of Rocky Branch Creek and the Grove and anticipate starting construction by the end of 2026. But it's largely dependent on funding. Once that is finished, the development redevelopment and enhancement of the eastern side of the park will be complete. The restoration of the Rocky Branch and the Grove is our next big landscape transformation project, and that would basically be completing the eastern side of the park, from Lake Wheeler Road all the way to South Boylan, and then up to Gibson Play Plaza. It also creates a really great gateway from Dix Park to downtown, which is important, Pierce said. Dix Park Conservancy will continue the conversion of Flowers Cottage into a coffee shop and beer and wine garden, along with public restrooms. That is anticipated to open by early summer 2026. When it comes to improvements surrounding the park, work has already begun on relocating utilities along Lake Wheeler Road to kick off the planned improvements. In 2026, construction on the road will begin and likely take between 18 and 24 months. Improvements include a new road and the addition of pedestrian and bicycle paths on the park side. Development around Dix Park has been strong, with both the Holston and the Ray at the Weld now open. The first retail tenant for the 20-story towers, Drift Coffee and Kitchen, will open in summer of 2026. Kane Realty's Rockaway Raleigh development is moving along as construction on The Heath, a 6-story apartment building, will begin in 2026, now that the first building in the development, The Row, is open. Sunflower Cafe will open in 2026, joining the other three retailers that are already open. 2025 was a big year for the 308-acre park, with the Gibson Play Plaza opening, the addition of Thomas Dambo's Seven Trolls, the opening of the Grab and Go Market at House of Many Porches, and installation of the Sunflower Power Poles along Lake Wheeler Road. Since the opening of the 18-acre Gibson Play Plaza in early June and the arrival of the Trolls in October, nearly 1 million people have visited Dix Park. That brings the total for the year so far to 1.6 million visitors, according to Placer.ai data provided to the city. What's next in sports business? UNC weighs new era with location of basketball arena. The Dean Smith Center was a major leap when it opened in Chapel Hill in 1986, a move to put a palatial basketball arena in what was then the outskirts of campus. And now the University of North Carolina is weighing an even bigger leap. The Tar Heels are looking at options to replace the Smith Center with an arena that includes more amenities and significantly development around it. In a podcast with TBJ earlier this year, Chancellor Lee Roberts made some key points about why the Carolina North land might make sense. Carolina North, the old airport land that is now largely used for storage, is 1.6 miles from the intersection of Franklin and Columbia Streets. Roberts said, that's only slightly farther than the 1.3 miles from that juncture to the Smith Center, he said. It also allows easy access to I-40, which is a problem for the Smith Center location. The most significant change in moving the arena would be in conjunction with the development. In the past, Carolina's basketball home has moved from the old tin can to Woolen Gym and then Carmichael Auditorium before landing in the Smith Center. In all cases, the moves were driven by basketball decisions and not external factors such as how to attract, say, retail options. But what Carolina is weighing is an acknowledgement that the times have changed, both for the school and for the town of Chapel Hill. Once a town known for being fiercely anti-growth, Chapel Hill is now looking for ways to energize its Franklin Street core and attract more full-time workers. And Roberts noted moving the basketball arena would allow UNC Health to eventually use the current space for hospital facilities. If you look out over the next 50 years, one eternal principle of real estate is that hospitals only grow up and they always need more land and they always want more of the land around them, Roberts said. And if you think about the proximity of our hospital to the Smith Center and you think about taking a long-term perspective, that's an important factor to be considered. UNC has long talked of doing a significant project with the Carolina North campus, and if a basketball arena lands there, look for it to be wrapped with development, similar to what is happening to the Lenovo Center in Raleigh. UNC has hired RCL Co. to consult on a plan for Carolina North, Sports Business Journal has reported, and the mix of options for the location could include a variety of buildings and facilities, including athletics facilities. UNC is also looking to gradually increase enrollment, and Carolina North offers space it may need for that. Roberts told TBJ that if the basketball arena were to move, then it would be part of a larger mixed-use development with multiple uses, including lodging, retail, entertainment, and dining. And I'll tell you, that would be a significant improvement on the Smith Center location, he said. What's next in higher education? Universities look to raise tuition amid funding cuts. For the first time in a decade, students from North Carolina are likely to pay more to attend University of North Carolina system schools in 2026. The boards governing UNC Chapel Hill, NC State University, and East Carolina University in November all approved 3% tuition increases for undergraduates, in-state students. The system board of governors will review these and other proposed increases in early 2026. The system has kept tuition for resident undergraduate students flat at all public universities for the past 9 years. During this time, universities could increase tuition for out-of-state undergraduates and all graduate students, whether North Carolina residents or not. Low tuition has helped the universities increase or maintain enrollment levels as other universities throughout the country have faced declines, but it has also forced the public schools to absorb increases in costs tied to inflation, despite increased tuition for graduate and out-of-state students over the years. So this year, the Board of Governors decided it would allow institutions to propose tuition increases of up to 3% for resident undergraduates. Under this new policy, universities can raise tuition for new students who enroll in the fall. Universities are required to develop proposals outlining their tuition increases, which the Board of Governors will review early next year. The proposed increases come amid a challenging year for higher education. The Trump administration in early 2025 tried to cap the funding that institutions received to cover from the federal government to cover indirect costs associated with research, such as building maintenance, safety, and compliance. That policy has been held up in court, but research universities are preparing for what a potential change would mean. Duke University estimates it would lose about $230 million in annual revenue if the administration's 15% cap were implemented. Amid this uncertainty, Duke is taking steps to save $350 million over the next 5 years. Some of these savings have come from about 600 people accepting the university's voluntary separation offers. The university also laid off about 45 employees. UNC Chapel Hill plans to cut about $70 million from its budget to cover losses amid losses in federal funding and uncertainty around state funding. The cuts include consolidating roles across departments, trimming administrative staff, and eliminating vacant positions, among other measures. East Carolina is cutting $25 million from its budget over the next 3 years in response to broader enrollment trends. These cuts will include permanent reductions, organizational adjustments, and an optimization of academic programs. What's next in healthcare? Duke and UNC chase dollars for Children's Hospital. The effort to develop a freestanding children's hospital in North Carolina could take a few major steps forward next year as health system officials try to open the facility in the early 2030s. UNC Health and Duke Health earlier this year identified a 230-acre site within the enormous Viridia development in Apex along US 1 and Highway 540 as the future site of a multi-billion dollar project. It was a remarkable collaboration between two intense rivals. The healthcare campus is expected to create thousands of jobs and have a transformative impact on Apex and the region. But the project is facing challenges. Funding for the massive endeavor is expected to come from hundreds of millions in taxpayer dollars, as well as donations and financing. The General Assembly in 2023 allocated $320 million toward the project. Officials from the health systems are advocating for additional funds, but state lawmakers have not yet agreed on an amount. The state Senate proposed increasing that last year to $850 million. Meanwhile, a proposed House budget called for scaling back the funding. By December, lawmakers still had not agreed on a long-term budget. As it tries to secure additional state support, North Carolina Children's, the nonprofit Duke and UNC created to lead and operate the hospital, is also fundraising from philanthropic sources. The two leaders who signed the paperwork incorporating the nonprofit in January are no longer in their respective roles. Dr. Wesley Burks stepped down as CEO of UNC Health and Dean of the UNC School of Medicine to focus on the development of the Children's Hospital. Longtime UNC physician and executive Dr. Christy Page succeeded Burks. Meanwhile, Dr. Craig Albanese left his position as CEO of Duke Health in September to become president of Kaiser Permanente in California. Duke has not yet named Albanese's successor, but has established an interim management structure where Dr. Tom Owens, executive vice president and chief operating officer of the health system, will report to University President Vincent Price. Despite these changes and the state funding uncertainty, the project is moving forward, Page said. When you think about how that will benefit the health of children and their families, it remains very important, Page said. But it's really a long-term vision, and there's a lot to do right now. Identifying a site for the hospital was a major milestone for the project. The transaction to acquire land in Apex is expected to close in the first quarter of 2026. After the deal closes, the organization will prepare next year to begin construction in 2027. Let's turn now to this week's Executive Voice article. This week's executive being featured is April Bogard Pinder. She's the CEO of law firm Cranfield Sumner, LLP. April Bogard Pinder took the helm of law firm Cranfield Sumner, LLP in early November as its first CEO. The law is a business like anything else, and so this represents a step forward, toward operating a business model so we're most effective for our clients, Bogard Pinder said. She has a background in law as well as banking. Her most recent role was Senior Vice President of Strategy and Program Execution at U.S. Bank in Dallas. Now Bogard Pinder has made the move to Raleigh to lead Cranfield Sumner's attorneys through an ever-evolving legal industry. TBJ asked, how did this new role come about for you? Cranfield was pretty intentional about doing this. They really wanted to be very strategic and thoughtful about business continuity, how to really evolve in this really dynamic legal landscape, and thinking about succession planning and how to really best operationalize their core values and thinking about client service. And so they worked with executive recruiting firm Calibrate and retained a nationwide search to do this. And that's how I really got involved, through Calibrate and really connecting that way, and myself kind of living those same core values of how to be really strategic, intentional, thoughtful, and for my next chapter. How has your experience at U.S. Bank prepared you for this role? Much like the storied institution of law, banking is going through an inflection point and really at the forefront of changing client expectations and behaviors, thinking about digital and technology as an amplifier and as a growth tool, and really needing to make sure that they're serving their clients. And so it really aligned well to take all of the experience of my law practice and then being able to really map up my core values to where Cranfield is and help Cranfield into the next phase and really looking out at that legal landscape. What are you proudest of when you look back on your accomplishments? As the bank grew over the period I was there, people and relationships to the community, its employees, etc., were at the main forefront. That's what attracted me so much to Cranfield as well, Their core values of teamwork, reputation, and client service married very much that. They have an excellent reputation. They very deeply care about how they're serving their clients, their peers, their colleagues, and their community. And that's what needs to remain at the forefront to go forward and to go forward nimbly and adapt. How did you implement AI tools at U.S. Bank? What we found is that there is a way to marry digital and human. It was a way to connect more. It was a way to simplify, to really manage the complexity that we've introduced. It's the fastest pace of change in human history, and it's the fastest transfer of knowledge in human history. And what we know when you study humans overall is that we become more complex, not less. What digital and AI allow you to do is really have those thought-based relationships that instead of transactional work, it becomes relationship-based, and you can really plan out lives and build relationships. What Cranfield really wants to do is modernize back-end operations, which if you study what AI is doing, that's really where AI has had success. That lets us go forward with our clients and think about not only how to simplify and streamline their lives and their complexity, but also to serve them better. What challenges will Cranfield face? We need to be both a business and a service provider, and that's what we're doing here. To quote James March, it's plumbing and poetry. The poetry is the practice of law, and the plumbing is how you run your business. So that when you're thinking about how you're billing your clients and how you're providing that service, your model is not simply raising rates. And April Bogard Pinder is, of course, the CEO, the new CEO of Cranfield Sumner LLP. She's from Avon, Indiana. She's 45 years old. Cranfield has 200 employees, and they're headquartered at 5440 Wade Park Boulevard in Raleigh. Let's look at the largest triangle area hotels to close out our day. The Raleigh Marriott City Center is number one. The Raleigh Marriott Crabtree Valley is number two. The Sheraton Hotel Raleigh is number three. And the North Raleigh Hilton, number four. The Sheraton Imperial Hotel and Convention Center at RTP is number five. Today's program is underwritten by Highwoods Properties. With its headquarters in Raleigh, North Carolina, Highwoods, a real estate investment trust, is committed to making our communities better places to live and work. Highwoods can be reached at 866-449-6637. We've run out of time for today's episode of Triangle Business Journal. Be sure to listen next time. We hope you've enjoyed listening. Again, I'm Hugh Bennett, reading for North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind or print impaired. This broadcast is readily available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any questions or comments, please call 919-832-5138.